Great. Good evening, everybody.
And if you could pull the script up.
Yep.
Great, thank you. Yep, let me just move some of these heads out of the way. Okay, I'm calling to order a meeting of the Boston Landmarks Commission on June 13th, 2023 at 6:05. Present are commissioners Jacques, Henderson, Walker, Orlando, Renahan, Hotelling, Gagno, Amadeo, Hoffman, and myself, Lynn Smilage. You can participate in this hearing by going to the Zoom meeting link posted in our agenda online at zoom.us/j/96081983918 or by calling 1-614-931-3860 and entering meeting ID number 96081983918. You can also submit written comments to us via email at blc@boston.gov. In accordance with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Executive Order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, including the July 16, 2022 amendment, extending the suspension of these provisions until March 31, 2025, we are conducting this meeting online. To ensure public access to the deliberations of the Boston Landmarks Commission, the public may access this call through telephone and video conferencing. This hearing is being recorded. All conversations between commissioners should be audible to the public in attendance until the hearing has been adjourned. At this point, I'd like to ask if there are any media or elected officials or representatives of elected officials present. If so, could you please identify yourself now by stating your name, title, and affiliation? And you can do that by using the raised hand function in Zoom.
I don't see anyone raising their hand.
Okie doke. So I will read the agenda into the record. First order of business, a demolition delay hearing, Article 85, on the property at 125 Tremont Street in Boston, followed by the annual meeting, which is the election of the chair and, small correction here, vice chair, not co-chair. We're gonna table the review and approval of the meeting minutes from the meeting on the 23rd of May, then staff updates and adjournment. So we'll start with first order of business, Article 85 demolition delay hearing. And as you probably all know, we're guided by a script on this, which I'll read from, and we'll let interested parties and the applicant know when they're invited to speak. All right. The purpose of this hearing is to determine whether the Boston Landmarks Commission should specify a demolition delay period pursuant to the Boston Zoning Code, Article 85, Chapter 665 of the Acts of 1956 as amended, to be applied to the property at 125 Tremont Street in Boston. The process has two steps. In the first step, the commission will determine whether the buildings are preferably preserved. Building. If so, it will invoke the 90-day delay if it finds that it is in the public interest for the buildings to be preserved or rehabilitated rather than demolished. In the second step, if the commission invokes the demolition delay, it will then evaluate alternatives to demolition and review the proposed project. The commission may consider waiving the delay if it finds there are no feasible alternatives to demolition. So step one, determination of significance and possible imposition of the 90-day delay. So Chelsea, could you review staff findings regarding significance, please?
Yes. Staff notes that 125 Tremont Street was built in 1955 as the Merchants Cooperative Bank. The structure was designed by notable American architecture firm Perry Shaw Hepburn and Dean, who are best known for their restoration of Colonial Williamsburg in Virginia. The mid-20th century Georgian Revival commercial building includes a Palladian motif used for the entrance, which is flanked by the fluted Doric columns and has a fanlight above. Second and third story windows have, the second and third story have narrow side bays flanking a wide central pavilion surmounted by a stone triangular pediment that is set within a brick parapet. The brick building has stone trim with two band courses defining the first story. The central bay projects shallowly from the facade. Five ribbon windows on the second level are fronted by a decorative iron balcony. The north elevation is five bays deep with a gable parapet containing a rundle between the two chimneys. Originally built for and owned by the Merchants Cooperative Bank in 1990, the Bank of Boston assumed responsibility for the assets of the failed Merchants Cooperative Bank. The building was, as I said, designed by Perry Shaw Hepburn and Dean. And although a minor example of its period and of its designers, the building is carefully composed, retains a handsome original storefront, and contributes to the streetscape in massing, materials, and an active ground floor.
Thanks, Chelsea. And backtracking, on the bottom of the first page of the script, significant, can you highlight the significance within the meeting of the ordinance? Do you see where we are? I'm assuming it would be E, the building is one who's lost whatever.
Yes.
That the only one?
It's C and E.
Okay, if you would read those, great.
Yes. Section 85.5.3C states that the building is historically or architecturally significant because of its period, style, method of building construction, or important association with famous architect or builder. And then it's also significant due to section 85.5.3E, which states that the building is one whose loss would have significant negative impact on the historical or architectural integrity or urban design character of the neighborhood. Sorry, I did that backwards.
Right, no problem, thanks. All right, we'll invite the applicant to present any information that will assist the commission in determining whether the building is historically or architecturally significant. You may also address the condition of the building. The building should be limited to information regarding significance and condition and should not address alternatives to demolition, proposed projects, or the suitability of the building for any proposed use. So I invite the applicant to identify yourself and talk about significance and condition.
And I think it may be the architect that's presenting. I'm not sure. Is John here or Mike Ross?
Mike Ross is there.
Okay, I think I kept hitting it, but I finally got it.
Okay, great.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Madam Chair, members of the board and staff of Landmarks. My name is Mike Ross. I am the attorney for the project. I work at Prince Lobel Law Firm. The architects are also here. They will be presenting right away. I just had a couple quick comments just to introduce the project, and I'll turn it directly over to them. I did want to make just one kind of point to the commission, and as you deliberate, as you make your determination with regard to both the significance of the building and or whether or not it should be subject to the demolition delay, both John Traficante, as I mentioned, and Stuart Marshall of Swartz Silver will be presenting accordingly. However, one thing I just want to flag prior to turning it over to them and to also to Doug Kelleher, who is a consultant with us who works at Epsilon Associates, all of us representing the Holocaust Legacy Foundation, the applicant, is a letter that's contained within the materials filed for this hearing. And that letter was submitted by Perry, Dean, Rogers, and Partners Architect. And as Landmark staff just, as Chelsea just mentioned, Perry, Dean are the architects of record for the 1955 merchant building at this location. They have numerous other examples of architecture in the immediate area in Boston. However, relevant to Article 85, the letter in your materials written by Mark Freeman, who was the president of Perry Dean, notably recommends to the commission to grant the demolition approval for this building. So for the architect of record to request that their building be demolished, particularly when it's part of the justification by the staff report for why it shouldn't be demolished, given that they are the architects of record, to me is quite significant. And I just wanted to kind of flag that on the front end. And then, you know, I myself and Doug and the rest of the team will be available for questions after the presentation. At this point, I'll turn it over to John Travacante and Stuart Marshall for the presentation.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you, Mike. I'm Stuart Marshall, project manager from Schwartz Silver. John Travacante is here with me. He's the design principal. We'll go through this quickly. Just to orient everyone as to where the property is located, it's on the southeast corner of the common on Tremont Street. Its adjacent street is a private way, Hamilton Place. It goes back to the Orpheum Theater. Diagonally across from the property, also on Tremont Street, is Park Street Church. And adjacent to the property, across the alleyway, is the Suffolk Law School. And of course, up Park Street, the view of the State House. Next slide, please. Here are some shots of the property. This is from the first on the left is from the common. The upper right hand side is looking down the alley with our building on the left and looking at Park Street Church. And the lower right hand corner is from up Tremont Street, looking across the street towards the building. Next slide, please. Again, on the top left, a shot down Hamilton Place. Building is on the right, Suffolk Law is on the left, and the Orpheum and Corner Mall entrance are down the alley. Lower left, you're looking at the Suffolk Law School primarily with a bit of the corner of our building. And on the right-hand side, a view from the rooftop, looking up at the State House. Historical information, a lot of this was discussed in the introduction by Chelsea, but I'd like Doug to maybe add some comments here too. Doug, if you're unmuted.
1 second, I didn't see it.
Thank you.
Okay, Doug, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Folks hear me now?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. As Mike mentioned, I'm Doug Kelleher, principal here at Epsilon Associates, and we've been advising on the project. And we'll just go through a brief summary here of the history of the building, and then we'll show you some existing condition photographs. Following up to Chelsea's comments, yes, the building was designed by the firm of Perry Shaw Hepburn, constructed in 1955, originally constructed for the Merchants Cooperative Bank. And then in later years, the late 20th century, the ground floor had various retail tenants. Building was originally constructed as a bank with offices for the Merchants Cooperative Bank on the upper floors. Later ground floor uses included a language school, FedEx retail operation, a 7-Eleven. T-Mobile antennas are located on the building. Some of you may recall the building was renovated in the late 1990s. You may remember a Buck-a-Book retail store on the ground floor. When the building was constructed in 1955, it was actually constructed on the original granite foundation of the prior buildings that existed on the site. Also, as noted earlier, the building is included in the Mass Historical Commission's inventory, the 1980 Form B for the property, Boston Landmarks Commission's Form B, cites that the colonial elements, such as the Palladian motif, central pediment, inside step gable, imitate the past without capturing the proportions or spirit of the Georgian style. Goes on to say that for these reasons, the building is not architecturally distinctive. That survey form, or that Form B from 1980, was later updated in 2009. And in 2009, the survey form, or the additional information added to the survey form, notes that the building is a minor example of its period and of its designers. And as Mike Ross noted earlier, I believe the commission earlier today or yesterday received a letter from Perry Dean Rogers, the successor firm to Perry Shaw and Hepburn, stating their opinion that the building is not significant for the purposes of architectural of Article 85. With that, I'll turn it over to Stuart and John to run through some existing condition photos.
Yeah, just some quick photos. That's the next slide, please. Just some exterior shots. It's been, you can see signage has been moved around over the years, mostly on the exterior. It was a 7-Eleven most recently, and this is where it is since 7-Eleven has left. If we can go to the next slide, please. Rooftop shots, mechanical systems are on the roof with no, there's no acoustic enclosure, it's just sitting up there. But you can see some of the reinforcement of the pediment on the left that's been added more recently on the upper right corner on the left-hand side of that photo. Next slide, please. And the interiors are really really aren't significant. It's really largely unexceptional detailing on the interior.
So I think this is the end of the significant section.
It is, thank you. Moving along. I would now ask the public if anyone has any comments on the historic significance of the building and whether or not demolition delay should be imposed. And I see one raised hand. Okay, Doug, I think you've been unmuted.
All right, thanks very much. Doug Meyer with the Downtown Boston Business Improvement District. Since the proponent first pitched this project to us some time ago, we have been strongly in support. Just think it's a great use for the bid service area. Moreover, we are on the clock. The BPDA has a comment letter deadline in just a few weeks, and we are in the process of writing a support letter to that end for the BPDA project review. And given that it would be impossible to have the development without the demolition as a necessary precursor, obviously we're in support of the demolition. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Lynn?
Yes. Roseanne, yes.
I noticed that Paul Grant is present, and I know that he sent in an email earlier today. I don't know if he wanted to speak during this part or not. I wanted to note that he did send in an email opposing the project.
So not in favor of demolishing the building.
I mentioned to you. Paul, I have unmuted you if you choose to speak.
Great. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. So my name is Paul Grant, and I am the direct abutter in owning 127 Tremont Street. And I just thought that there was a neighborhood process in terms of reaching out to the abutters. I had reached out to Jody Kipnis on March 15th, and she had reached out to my brother about a week before. And I said, Jody, sorry for the delay in getting back to you. My brother Greg passed your information along to me last week and mentioned that you wanted to get together for a Zoom meeting to discuss your project at 125 Tremont Street. I'm available next week from Tuesday on. Let me know if that works for you. Looking forward to speaking with you. Signed, Paul Grant, 127 Tremont Street. I don't think that there's any question that there's a lot of nods to colonial architecture and the pediment and stuff like that. Whether it's significant or not, it's a lot more significant than some other Article 85 meetings that I've been a part of in my development process. I've seen the renderings of the the Holocaust Museum that is proposed. And although—
So Paul, at this point in the proceedings, we're only talking about architectural or historic significance of the building and whether or not demolition delay should be imposed.
Okay, so in that Article 85 process, am I correct in saying that there should have been someone reaching out to me directly from this project?
The abutters, there's a process for notifying abutters, and that was followed through on by the proponent.
Well, we did, I'm just speaking, I saw notices on every other building except for mine. I think there are.
And I think their abutters are also notified by mail.
So I didn't get that either. Again, I just want to reiterate that I think there is some architectural significance there. I think there are definite nods to the colonial architecture, which is very prevalent in the Boston vernacular. And I would like to see alternatives to the demolition. And so I would be voting to delay it.
Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Michael?
If I may, just to elucidate on some of our direct communication with our abutter, if that's okay.
Certainly, at this point, all we need to know was that the process was followed and that abutters were notified as this required.
The applicant spoke twice to the brother about this project. There's been a notice taped to our building. The building that is currently to the right of us, 127, with the previous speaker, Mr. Grant, owns with his brother, is under construction. So there is no, I believe there's no viable way to approach or enter the building. But certainly my law firm, who's very experienced in notification, handled the notice for this project, physically went out and mailed, hand-delivered, as well as emailed people in the area. And of course, Mr. Grant is here today. So somehow he realized that we have this hearing and we're doing it. I think what's more maybe directly related to this is that on 127, there is an illegal window on our side on a party wall currently. So that window, if construction was to take place, could be sealed up. And I would suspect that
I feel like we're sort of wandering off course a little bit.
Sure. But needless to say, there's been ample communication and conversation with the abutters. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There is not. Seeing any other comments, Chelsea?
Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
Yes.
I was just curious to know if you received other letters of support for
that. That's where I'm going next. As the hearing unfolds. Yes. Chelsea, could you share any other communication we've received, any written testimony or by email?
Yes. I'll just summarize very quickly if that's okay. So we have received a letter of support from the Drucker Company, which, Mike, you might be able to confirm this, but I believe they're the people that are handling the work at the new building behind this building.
They're actually the owners of the entertainment facility that's at the end of Orpheum Place.
Okay.
The Orpheum.
Yep. So the Drucker Company in support. Obviously, we've already heard twice that the the architecture firm Perry Dean has written a letter in support. We also have a letter from Councillor Ed Flynn, in support of the demolition and the project. And then we have two letters of support from opponents, one whose name I don't have right here with me, but I will look it up, and the other from Paul Grant. Let me just find that here.
So we heard from two individuals opposed to demolition and the others in support of demolition.
And three others in support. Okay. And I do have that name for the record, so I will get it.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions for the applicant or comments on the significance of the building?
John Amadeo, you should be unmuted.
Yeah. Lynn and fellow commissioners, I think, you know, we may as a group determine that the building itself doesn't warrant the demolition delay on the basis of its architectural distinction. However, I think I'd like us to at least acknowledge that it sits in an incredibly high profile location adjacent to several other Boston landmarks, the Boston Common, the Park Street Church, up Park Street is the State House, the Orpheum Theater, just the character of Tremont Street itself. And that we might want to be concerned if we don't impose demolition delay and don't ask the proponent to present what they have in mind following that, we lost an opportunity to comment. And I realize, Lynn, that I might be stepping across the line of the topic at hand, but actually it does go to the topic at hand, which is whether or not we impose demolition delay for the purposes of hearing what the proponent has in mind to replace it. And I only bring this up to ask the question of staff and you, Lynn, that if we didn't impose demolition delay, does the Landmark Commission staff still have an opportunity for project review?
No.
Okay. Then if we don't, then I'll just end my comment by saying I would advocate for demolition delay in that case.
And we do that not infrequently. Any other comments or questions from commissioners?
This is Richard Henderson. I have a comment and I guess a question to those of you who know better than I. This is an interesting period of time, the 1950s, to be seeing a colonial revival building like this, and I'm just wondering, is this one of the last of that type of building to be built before the rise of brutalism and so forth in the 1960s? Or are there lots of colonial revival buildings that have been built in this kind of period in downtown Boston?
I don't know about Boston per se, but the colonial revival, you know, the classic red brick with a trim. I mean, they were still building them in the 60s and 70s. I don't know about downtown Boston. I'd have to think hard about other representatives, but I don't know that I would call it rare.
Yeah. Okay.
But Chelsea might have a thought on that.
I actually do think that they are somewhat rare. Especially one with such significant and sort of strong ornamentation. This was definitely a statement building, and I don't think they're as common as you might think in the city.
Okay, thanks. I see some comments from others, just commissioners, one more opportunity if you have something to say, and then we'll call on the folks who have their hands raised.
Hi, just a quick couple of thoughts, Lynn, from mm-hmm. Jeff Gagno. I think you can understand why a building like that would be built in that style at that time, facing the State House and across from Park Street Church. I mean, that makes sense to me. But what's kind of interesting is that it would be built on the foundations of a building from the 1880s, which was almost certainly not in that style. So it's just the history of the site itself is kind of interesting that they regressed in styles by 100 years or more when they constructed the current building, even if it is a somewhat stripped down version of the, what the original might have been. So that's not a vote of support or non-support, just a kind of interesting thought about the site.
Richard Andre.
Would be able to speak.
Now. Hello, this is Father Rich. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I'm my name is Rich Andre. I am the director of the Paula Center at 5 Park Street. I am so thrilled to be living here. I moved here a year ago. I live on the block. I walk around the common every day, and I speak in favor of the demolition because, frankly, I show off this neighborhood to everyone, and I have never really noticed that building. That I think that the Park Street Church and the Suffolk University building are much more catching to the eye, even though I get off at that subway station all the time, that building actually does not seem to catch my eye. I'm not a real architect, but I am in favor of the new use. Thank you.
And iPad.
iPad, could you tell us your name for the record, please?
Could that be me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I live across the street, across the common, and I just happened to learn about this from a piece of paper I saw on a window on Beacon Street.
Could we ask for your name, sir?
My name is John Hemingway.
Thank you.
So I don't know anything about the process, but are you allowed to take into account the context in which this building is? It's going to change the context to demolish a colonial revival brick building and put in a glass modernistic building right across the street from the Park Street Church. It seems a major change to the the flavor of that corner. And I don't know whether you're allowed to take that into account or not.
Yes, that is a consideration.
Oh, good. I'm not hearing any strong arguments about demolishing the building. Some successor architect who doesn't represent any of the constituencies at issue here says, my predecessor 75 years ago, it's not a significant building, doesn't seem very persuasive to me.
Okay, so thank you, sir. So you are in favor of invoking the delay?
Sure, until I understand the process, yes. Thank you.
Okay, so at this point, if there are no additional comments, I will entertain a motion regarding demolition delay. John Amadeo, is that something that you were inclined to do?
Yes, I am inclined to do that. I don't have a script in front of me, though.
I'd be happy to read it for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Please.
Whereas the Boston Landmarks Commission finds that in the public interest, it is preferable that the building at 125 Tremont Street be preserved or rehabilitated rather than demolished. Therefore, the Boston Landmarks Commission has determined that this significant building is subject to demolition delay and that the Commissioner of Inspectional Services shall not issue a demolition permit until September 14th, 2023. Which is 90 days from the close of the public hearing. I would need a second. John needs a second.
I'll second.
Was that John Freeman?
Richard.
All right, and everyone voting with the exception of Commissioner Renahan. Commissioner Jacques?
Yes.
Henderson?
Yes.
Walker?
No.
Orlando?
Yes.
Let's see, who else is hoteling?
Yes.
Gagno?
Yes.
Amadeo?
Yes.
Hoffman?
Yes.
All right, the demolition delay has been invoked. The applicant shall be responsible for properly securing and protecting the building during the time that it is subject to delay under this article. So now we move on to alternatives to demolition, at which point the commission will determine whether the information presented is sufficient for us to issue a determination that there is no feasible alternative to demolition. If so, the commission may waive the delay. So now we ask the applicant back to discuss alternatives to demolition that were considered, followed by the proposed new project.
Great, thank you. Next slide, please. So we have basically are showing two alternatives to demolition. One is keeping the building that's there and adding to it above. Obviously it fills the site. There isn't really any external site to work with. And the second is keeping one facade, the Tremont Street facade of the building and building behind it. And before we look at those, this is a letter from our structural engineer, Silman.
It might be good to just clarify that the current program is about 33,000 square feet, and the existing building is capable of housing 15,000 square feet. So we're quite a bit under what the building is capable of holding internally, and anything that we would do on the site would require an addition.
Right. Structurally, the building, as it was built as a bank building, the first floor is built to support a 100 pound per square foot live load. The upper floors are 70 to 75, including the rooftop. Now, the building was designed to support some additional weight, and analysis shows that that really means that we could turn the in addition to bolstering the second and third floor, we could turn the rooftop into also 100 pounds a square foot by load level. But we still need two levels above that for that option. And in doing so, we really would be looking at replacing the foundation while retaining the building that's there, replacing the foundation, or increasing the capacity of the entire foundation, while bolstering the upper floors and providing some sort of seismic and lateral structural system for the building, which it currently does not have. So that's the structural report in a nutshell. Next slide, please. So alternative one, reusing the existing structure. We don't need to go through all the plans. These are the street level. There are a few salient points. One, the street level, we would have to use the existing entry, center entry off Tremont Street, which is particularly congested pedestrian way. And given the program for the building, a museum space, queuing is challenging in that location. It is quite a congested spot, but we to get accessibility for the first level of the building and to reuse existing front entry, that is what we'd be trying to do. The rest of this, we look at the plans, and I'll touch on some of the other issues as we go up, but I don't want to spend too much time on them. But basically fitting our program, our required program, as John said, of about 32 or 33,000 square feet within the existing footprint means that we're adding something. Next slide, please. That really doubles the volume of the existing building. It's still within the zoning envelope, which is 125 feet. In fact, our preferred proposal for demolition is something that's slightly lower than this. It's worth noting too that the nature of the program being a museum space, the windows would really need to be blocked up at gallery levels. And because of the fixed volume of floor to floor heights, we would have to make less than ideal choices for the program about taller spaces that are required. We wouldn't have the flexibility in this alternative to make the kinds of adjustments that we would like to make. We could do it in the next alternative. Let's keep going through these. just quickly go through the plans here.
So as we page through these plans, we made an effort to take the program we've been working on for the last year or so and put it in and program the existing building. So the gallery spaces open to the public. Part of the program also as a museum is that we want an open and public inviting entry to the space to support the program along the Freedom Trail. We want to use the proposed building to actually talk about freedom and democracy. And that really requires us to kind of carefully choose where we have openings and kind of the views in and out of the building. And as Stuart said, most of the exhibit spaces for this building don't want any windows or any natural light at all. It's a museum. So it really kind of, it's challenging to program spaces like that in a building that was designed as offices with a bank lobby. So I think you can continue down. You can look at in the, it might be worth noting just the section drawing to the left of this. Mm-hmm. In a red outline, maybe Chelsea, you could point it out. That's the existing section of the building. And then the program that we would require would be almost doubling the mass of the building on the outside. And so the challenge really is, how do you put something as big as the building on top of it while preserving any of the historic character of the existing building? And if we can scroll down to alternative two. So alternative two frees up some of the sectional qualities of the building and lets us begin to do some of the things that we would like to do for the program to function better, the museum program. And it does so by basically replacing everything behind the Tremont Street facade. In fact, as you can see on the ground level here, the entrance would be moved around the corner a place where we really can get a better accessible entrance for more people and affords queuing down Hamilton Place rather than out on Tremont Street. Right, it deals with some of the crowd control that that we would want to make sure we kind of clearly deal with, right? So we know how busy Park Street Station is and how busy those sidewalks are. So the idea of kind of queuing and waiting outside the museum right in the line of traffic has been a challenge of the project from the beginning. And we think moving it around the corner onto Hamilton, where it is privately owned, is a much better solution for this building and for the city.
So again, not dissimilar to the previous scheme, begin to see, and it does allow us to have a little bit of flexibility with regards to ceiling heights. We have a rail car that's visible on the facade on Hamilton Street in this version. We're able to place that at that elevation, not working with the existing section, but with this level of replacement behind the facade, we're able to achieve that. Keep scrolling here. Mm-hmm. Plans, when we look at the preferred plan, the demolition plan, these are not dissimilar to those plans.
Yeah, I think it might also be worth mentioning just in terms of the program. We are talking about it as a museum, but a big component of the program is education. And its goal really is to educate high school level students throughout New England, certainly in Massachusetts. And so providing kind of proper sized classrooms and spaces to support that activity is really kind of vital to this mission.
Keep scrolling, please. So here you're seeing split level plans, and that's a way of getting the kind of sectional dimensions that we prefer, while both at the lobby level and at that rail car level, and managing to fit in an additional half level, so it's more efficient volume, use of the volume. going up an additional half floor.
Yeah, I think even in that section, you could see the relationship of the rail car to the exterior windows. It's really important in the program and as part of the mission to kind of present that as a visible element from the street, as well as a key element to the exhibition design.
You can see the rail car levels. It's a little bit of peeking out of the visibility of that artifact and the facade where we're not keeping the existing face.
I think that kind of that summarizes the alternatives to demolition.
And I think we can move on to the proposed project.
Okay.
And discuss if there's a need to discuss alternatives in the context of what you're ultimately planning.
Well, it's a site plan of the proposed building. This is like the last in plan, but without the Tremont Street facade. You can see the opportunities here to present a more public face for the museum to the street, engages the street and the city a bit more openly. With the lobby on the left-hand side, again, like the last option of the entrance, primary entrance is right on the corner of Tremont and Hamilton Place, but facing Hamilton.
Yeah, I would just also add that we're trying to be responsive of the elements along Tremont, specifically the T head house that comes up right in front of the first floor of the building, which from as the existing building is kind of situated behind it, we're actually using that pinch point along Tremont to start the exhibit, to actually start to engage people passing by, the passerby, and possibly use that wall that you see on Tremont directly across from the head house as a way of potentially beginning the exhibit experience to start to tell the story.
Yeah, engravings, wrenchings, things that are pertinent to the exhibits inside, both on Hamilton and Tremont.
And then it actually opens up to the corner so that Tremont Street, it's accessible from both Tremont and Hamilton Place, but it also allows us to use the sidewalk along Hamilton to queue outside of the museum.
Yeah, one of the challenges here along Tremont too is the pitch of it's just about 1 to 20. So getting and that's with obviously the existing entry isn't quite accessible. It has some odd cross slopes and such. But
well, there are two levels. The existing building has two levels to deal with the grade change. It has a level entry, one level that is higher along Hamilton, and the center entry, which is midway along Tremont Street.
There's about a 3-foot drop from the Hamilton-Tremont corner down to the other end of the facade on the south end of this plan.
So entering at the Hamilton Street elevation allows us to provide a fully compliant, you know, accessible and compliant first floor, which currently we don't have in the existing building. Yeah. Yet. You can go to the next.
This is really the same diagram, just giving an axonometric view of some of the elements of the exterior. You can begin to see not just the openness of the lobby level and the covered entrance, but also granite paneling with etchings and other graphic information that's beginning to give some hint as to what the exhibits are about, information about special exhibits, etc. And that might come out, in fact, to site walls, which we would use both for information, but also for bolstering the property against a vehicular strike. So there's some bollards, a bit of site walls to aid in that.
Still in design. One thing to mention is the requirement of having some security out at the face of this building.
Mm-hmm. Next slide, please. Just showing the section again. We have 125 foot high zoning envelope, and this building is staying well below that, just below 90 feet. below the allowable FAR. Next slide, please. Again, plans, we don't need to spend a lot of time on these.
Yeah, these plans are pretty much identical to the second alternative to ultimate to demolition. So this is the ideal program right now. You might stop on that one perspective view, which is an important part of the project, which is this idea of being able to overlook the oldest public park in America, right, the Common. But also views of Park Street Church, views up to the State House, and of course, views down to the Freedom Trail. So a real connection to the site itself is an important part of this project for us. And we think that the museum program and the educational component of it fits extremely well with the mission of the Freedom Trail in itself.
Elevations may be better seen, and there's some analysis here too, but lower level, you know, opaque and glass up top in the multi-purpose room, but in between is largely opaque space.
Yeah, and windowless
with space. Windowless space with one exception, which is the glimpse of the boxcar, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Next slide. The relationship between the street level of the existing buildings and our base, the kind of body of the thing in the middle, and then the open top above. Similar elements on Hamilton Place elevation.
And maybe to mention that along this elevation, the Hamilton Place is actually owned by 125 Tremont, and there are right of ways across it to the hotel, Suffolk Law, and the Orpheum. So we will be using the back corner of this for our loading area for special exhibits. So one of that is a requirement that, yeah, thank you. That's a requirement that's essential to the changing exhibits of this museum, and to kind of create a first floor that's public and changing and inviting, so that there's reason to come back to the museum.
This is the alley. There is a 6 foot wide alley behind the building that connects. It runs parallel to Tremont Street, and this is that elevation. We're going to talk about
Sure. We're still in design development, of course, and we're continuing our meetings with the BPDA and the BCBC. But what we're looking at right now is a facade that is kind of wrapped in a metal woven fabric, a mesh that wraps the building like a curtain, and it really comes back to these ideas of. During Nazi reign, and when they were, you know, the Third Reich was kind of, you know, basically rounding up undesirables and Jews, the curtains were drawn in a lot of these houses, and, you know, to protect them. So this is an effort to kind of think about that, pulling it around where we don't want windows in the building. It's a way of creating an active and relevant facade. But then pulling it back in this one featured area, which exposes the boxcar. And it's the one moment kind of in the history of the Holocaust where lives were completely disrupted. It's where, you know, you were kind of dragged onto the boxcars, and actually some of the victims actually paid for tickets, you know, onto these boxcars and then taken to concentration camps and death camps.
And I think so. This is really the one opportunity. It's, I think, critical as sort of a public presence for everyone to sort of be a witness to this part of history. I think that's the one moment where it's appropriate to pull the curtain back. So it's not about concealing view or being able to look out. It's about giving an opportunity to look in.
And to reflect on that part of our history. You know, the bottom right-hand corner, too, just to draw attention to that one slide, that is that wall along Tremont directly across from the T Head House. And there's an opportunity there to kind of do something with that facade that could, you know, either it's quotes, you know, or it could be prints on that stone facade. But also you can see the shadow line of that metal fabric curtain that we've talked about above. So that undulating curtain changes during the day. It reflects light. It becomes this warm glowing thing at night. So it really is kind of an element that we think is can activate the otherwise a pretty blank facade because of the, you know, because there is no natural light in those exhibit spaces and mm-hmm. desire. Next slide.
This is showing some possibilities for etchings and the live graphics on the granite along Tremont Street.
And you can see the grade change here too. It is a relatively, 1 in 20 is the maximum steepness of a ramp without a railing. I'm sure you all know that, but it's a difficult challenge just to get a 6 foot wide opening in a slope like that and make it ADA compliant. So the current entry, you know, using a center entry along Tremont becomes an accessibility challenge as well because of the natural grade of the sloping sidewalk.
Similar study on Hamilton Place, similar treatment.
And again, the signage is a placeholder right now. We're still working that out, but as an idea to kind of activate the corner, that is one of the things that we've been talking about, you know, making that open and glassy corner so that it's transparent and inviting. You know, looking down Tremont Street, sort of talked about some site walls. We're still discussing that. I know the BPDA was a little concerned about the flow of the traffic along there. It's certainly something that we, you know, are going to consider removing. So, you know, but we still want to make this entry kind of dedicated, you know, space along this entry at the corner for the museum.
It's still approachable from Tremont Street, obviously.
Right.
Next slide, I think, shows the approach well. And we're kind of lucky that the Suffolk Law's bow comes out to meet the property line, but the flanking sides of the building are set back. And so the entrance really is visible for quite a long way, all practically from the top of City Hall Plaza.
Yeah,
you can really see.
And you can see we're right on the Freedom Trail here. So right in the foreground is the line of the brick line of the Freedom Trail.
View from Park Street, the bottom of Park Street. People are visible, will be visible kind of going onto the rail car.
Right. What we're not showing here is the proposed project behind us, the hotel, which is up at 125 feet.
Just peek over.
Yeah, which would kind of peek over the top of our building. Mm-hmm.
You do show that in your elevations, though, I think,
yes.
Shattered.
Yeah, right.
If you need me to go back, I can show people that.
Well, that's okay.
If anyone's interested, if we go back, that's our last slide.
Okay, thank you. So before we ask commissioners if they have questions or comments, I'm going to ask if anyone from the public has comments on the alternatives to demolition that were presented or the proposed project. See, Michael.
Just, Madam Chair, point of information, I did want to point out that my understanding was that Suffolk University, represented by John Nucci, submitted a letter of support as well. They were direct abutter to our left.
Supporting the proposed project. Yeah.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think we've received that yet, but maybe it just went to Roseanne. So we'll check. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just while I have it up, this is the addition to the... This building here is mm-hmm. getting a very tall addition on top of the existing historic building behind 125 Tremont Street.
And Chelsea, if you pan up, I think two more slides, you can kind of see the height of one. Actually, we crop it because it keeps going on. But
yeah, it goes up further.
Yeah.
But to your point, it's taller.
Doug Meyer?
Right. Just to briefly reiterate from my prior comments, we are in the process of writing a support letter for the proposed, you know, redevelopment renovation with that BPDA comment letter deadline looming in just a few weeks. So thanks very much.
Comments from the public?
Let me just check the list. Any comments from the public on the alternatives or the proposed design?
I see David Kubiak.
Let me unmute him.
Hi, yeah, I'm Dave Kubiak. I live in the North End, and I'm very interested in this particular site because of a demolition review that's underway in the North End. And so my comments about 125 Tremont's design kind of reflect some of my concern about the project that might be built at 149 Salem Street in the North End. First of all, it was interesting to hear people say that that the existing structure complements, I'm using that word, complements some of the historic structures in the area. Also interesting to hear that from one gentleman that he never really noticed this building. I would agree with that. But then when I saw the demolition alternative where the face of the building is saved, at least on Tremont Street, if not on both sides, the new design with the original facade, I thought actually brought out the original facade, emphasized it. And it actually might make the historic context of the, or character of the existing building, it might emphasize that even more with the new design. I think it most definitely would. So I just thought that was really interesting that, yeah, you overlook this building now, but would you overlook this building and its architectural significance with the project built into it? Concern I have is with the, and I couldn't tell whether it was third floor or fourth floor or both, the jutting out of the floor, the glass structure there. And my concern there is with Hamilton Place. I don't know whether Hamilton Place has any historic significance. I don't know whether it's a historic view corridor. And this is a concern that is coming up with 149 Salem Street in the North End, where they also want to have bay windows jutting out into the intersection at Salem and Prince, blocking the view going up Salem Street towards the Old North Church. And of course, that both Salem Street and Prince Street, those corridors are historic, have historic significance. I'm not sure about Hamilton Place, but it does seem to me that that there is something iconic about Hamilton Place, that corridor. And I don't like the fact that something would be interrupting that view. And if they really need that glass jutting out, why not put it on the other side of the building against 127 Tremont? You'd still have the visual effect that you're getting. You might still have the programming purpose behind that glass without interrupting the view corridor along Hamilton Place. And I think that's it for now. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Any other public comment on the alternatives or the
proposed project?
I'm going to call my commissioners, who I'm sure have some comments.
Great. And if John, if you, there's a place you want me to go to, let me know.
Sure. First, I have a question about the proposed the facade of the proposed building, and the parts of the facade that are meant to be opaque have this kind of chainmail curtain facade treatment, but obviously that chainmail material is transparent. You can see through it. What is backing it up that is actually opaque? What material would that be?
We're looking at a couple of materials. In these renderings, it's a white ACM, so aluminum composite material, panels behind the stainless steel curtain. We are looking at alternatives now. One is a white brick that we're looking at, and the other is another metal panel system to kind of, you know, those are honestly being discussed as late as like this afternoon. So those are still in the works, but yeah. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, as a follow-up question to what you just said, is there a significance for the material to be white in color?
Yeah, the significance is, you know, one of the things that we've talked about for this project is, although the subject matter is quite dark, and then physically the exhibits will be quite dark, some of what we're working with and the experience that we want a visitor to have is to move, as you know, I think Stuart mentioned this, but the visitor will move from the top down through the exhibits. So they'll take an elevator to the fifth floor, just above the, or just below the glass level, the top, and they'll come down through the exhibits half level at a time, and it'll go from light at the top to dark in the middle of the core of the exhibits, and then light again at the bottom. And we want the visitors to leave hopeful. We want the building to be hopeful. We want it to be light and sparkling. And we actually think with the contrasting materials of this part of Tremont Street, we have red brick at the Park Street Church. We have white stone at Suffolk Law. We have a darker brick, a yellow brick, and even an orange brick. And then down the alley, a lot of signage for the Orpheum and other brick and mixed materials, stone and mixed materials. So we think that a light palette with stone, potentially brick behind the metal mesh, is a color and material that would fit well on this site. We're rendering it a little cool right now. I think honestly, we would like it to read a little warmer in its kind of relationship to both Suffolk Law School and some of the warmer colors of the brick around it.
White bricks are a little more sympathetic to the Suffolk color palette.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Not as cool as you say.
Right.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
John, do you mind me interrupting you, because I think I missed a public comment from Greg?
I don't mind at all. Go ahead.
Greg, you can now unmute yourself and speak if you wish to.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I am one of the abutters at 127 Tremont Street. And I don't know if my brother was able to voice this, but we would have liked to be involved in the beginnings of the design of this building. We had reached out to the development team, Ms. Kipnis, over a month ago, I believe, and no one was ever kind enough to get back to us. Ms. Kipnis sent me a text in March. I was on vacation. I sent it to my brother at the time. He reached out, and then that was it. In terms of the building itself, I would have to back up the gentleman from the north end. It's an awfully stark difference to the architecture on the street already. don't really know how it ties in historically with what is being offered. I certainly not a fan of the glass shooting out into the corner of Hamilton Place and Tremont. And obviously we're not gonna be big fans of switching the other side to have it right in front of the building we own. I would say that incorporating the current facade, especially since I believe it is, it might be a historic site. I know that supposedly we talked to one of the people at the National Association of Dental Labs. From what we gathered, it was a site of one of the original dental labs in the United States. So they said they were going to offer a comment as well. And in moving forward, I will say this, we do support the idea of the museum. We, as direct abutters, would not like to be cut out of the conversation moving forward.
Okay, thank you, Greg. I want to move back to commissioners and just remind you that this body, this commission, isn't in a position to negotiate conversations between abutters and the proponent. We have a different job here. So, any other commissioners have questions or comments on the alternatives to demolition or the proposed new design?
I'll just chime in to say, this is Jeff Gagneau, that I don't find the presentations of incorporating some aspect of the existing facade to be compelling at all. And they kind of take a building that was kind of sedate and, to my mind, make it even more sedate, or I just don't find them successful. So that's just my comment.
Yeah, I think they maybe enhance its, what some might say is its mediocrity.
Lynn,
any other commissioners? Justine?
If this project wasn't going for demolition, would the project have been required to go through design review for a renovation?
No.
Not with our office. They will have to work with the BPDA.
Sure, but not with BLC.
No.
Okay. So I would agree with Jeff as well that based on the modifications that would be happening to the facade in the alternative options, that it doesn't make sense for accessibility as well as the final product.
Thanks, Justine.
And I did cut off John Amadeo, so if he wants to speak again, let me
know. And Richard Henderson.
Yeah, I think I agree with the others, in particular Justine's comment on the accessibility. That slope is pretty significant, and getting accessibility into the existing facade seems like it would be quite difficult. So I would. In fact, perhaps support a motion to reverse whatever the motion is that we do.
To waive the delay.
Thank you.
I would
though ask the proponent. You're just at the beginning of your Article 80 process. When are you intending to?
Richard, we heard a bit of what you said, but not all of it.
I think he froze.
Madam Chair, I think I picked up the gist of...
probably the timeline for the project.
Yeah, the public meeting was just scheduled. It's in July. I'll get you the exact date. One of my colleagues will either text it to me or send it to me. We just filed the small project review application with the BPDA. They issued a 45-day comment period So again, that ends somewhere in the middle of July, and that's where we're going to have our public meeting then. I do want to just mention that, because I think part of the question goes to kind of the whole community outreach effort, is that the team is surprised, very surprised that we're learning of kind of a dissatisfied abutter here at a public meeting in front of you folks. We've, as you could see from the priest across the street and Suffolk University Law School and Mr. Drucker behind us, we are working very diligently with the abutters around us. All of them are important. We have communication with our abutters at 127. We were a little bit surprised today to see them show up in this manner. All that being said, we will continue to work with our abutters and through the community process, which to date has gone quite well, I think, as evidenced by the letter of support from President Ed Flynn and others.
Thank you. John Amedeo.
Yes, thanks. I would concur with my other fellow commissioners about the alternatives to demolition. Neither of them seem satisfactory. Preserving part or all of the facade of the existing building. We're probably leaning towards waiving the demolition delay, and I'm fine with that. And we probably won't have another opportunity to comment on the building, so I'm just going to make a comment now, and a suggestion that the applicant can consider, and that is the use of white as the backup for the chain curtain. And I understand the desire for lightness. And I'm just wondering if just taking the dial and turning it clockwise just ever so slightly to get off of bright white and into a pale gray. It's just that bright white buildings, the Suffolk Law School building notwithstanding, is just not typical in Boston and of the character of the context. I appreciate the architect's interest in going warmer than the rendering is shown, but I think if it was just a very pale gray granite, gray stone behind the chainmail and to match the granite that is on the ground floor, maybe that same granite just extends up behind the chainmail. And the chainmail itself, the chain curtain will shimmer and reflect a lot of light. And I think that will also bring the lightness that you seek to those floors. But anyway, that's my suggestion.
Richard.
Richard, did you have more to say? We lost you halfway through your comment.
I know I have problems with Zoom on this particular computer. When did I cut out? What did I say?
You asked about
timing. I think you're asking about the timing of the project, about when did they intend to do something?
Oh, when do they intend to demolish, given that they're at the beginning of the Article 80 process, and would they commit to perhaps as a condition of our waiver to not demolish until they've got their approvals and they've got their financing ready to go, rather than rush to do it and have a hole in the ground?
I'm happy to discuss that with the client. It was my understanding that there's not a rush to demolish, that we haven't been approved yet. The public meeting, by the way, is July 11th. Certainly by the public meeting, we'll have we could have an answer to that question, Commissioner. But I could also get an answer to that question with better specificity to the staff. We're sensitive to the request. There would still have to be construction drawings. There's an exhaustive process, right, to get to being ready to construct. So I appreciate the question, and I'll get you an answer through to staff. Like I said, my understanding is there's not a huge rush, but I do see Stuart raising his hand, so maybe he has a better answer than I do.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Mike. I think it's definitely, we understand too that we've worked on a number of projects. We don't want this to sit as an empty, vacant site. So there is no, as far as I understand, and Mike, we can, you know, you can check with our client, but I don't believe there's any rush to demolish the building before we get other approvals. In fact, my experience is that the city doesn't want us to take down a building until we actually have a project to build back in its place. So avoiding those kind of situations.
And then I might wonder, is there a reason to waive the delay then?
Well, yeah. Madam Chair, I think there is a reason to waive the delay. And that is one of the, your board is a well-respected board, and you guys are thought leaders in this space. So
I hear you. It's a statement.
It would be a statement. And this is a very important museum that means a lot to a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. We wouldn't want to see, unless we were warranted it, unless there was a real reason for it, we wouldn't want to see hurdles in front of us unnecessarily.
You're absolutely right. At which point I think I will entertain a motion to waive the delay.
I'll make that motion, Lynn.
Okay, thanks, Justine. Second?
I'll second.
Thanks, Felicia. And then everyone voting with the exception of Commissioner Renahan. Okay, Commissioner Jacques?
Yes.
Henderson?
Yes.
Walker?
Yes.
Orlando?
Yes.
Let's see. Hotelling?
Yes.
Gagno?
Yes.
Amadeo?
Yes.
Hoffman?
Yes.
And I vote yes. All right. The demolition delay has been waived. We wish you good luck and good progress with your project. Thanks.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
Right. Lynn, can I just make one
sure.
small note? To answer Commissioner Amadeo's comment that there's no ability to weigh in, there's a 45-day comment period with the BPA process. So, you know, folks are certainly welcome to weigh in during that process, not perhaps as the commission, but so there's still time for that.
No. Yeah. Thanks, Roseanne, for reminding us.
Thank you.
All right. Next order of business is the annual meeting, which is the election of officers. And I'm not sure how we're doing this, Roseanne.
So BLC staff has received some self-nominations for the positions of chair and vice chair.
Good.
And we have received a nominee of Brad Walker for chair, and also Justine Orlando for vice chair. And that would be the slate proposed for the annual meeting vote.
Thank you. So do I just do a roll call, I guess?
Yeah, that part.
Or do we want this to be like?
I think we've done this differently every year.
I think last year last year we did a roll call. I think
we did. Okay,
we did.
For each or for both?
For the slate.
It's a slate.
Yeah. Okay, and I made a mistake, Anne, last time. You should have voted last time, so I'm going to let you vote this time and not Commissioner Hotelling. Sorry.
That's okay.
All right. I guess we need a motion to accept the slate as presented.
I'll make that motion.
And that was?
Anne.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was Anne. Thank you, Anne. Second?
I'll second with reservations over the end of the smileage era.
Absolutely. Okay, let's see. Commissioner Jacques?
Yes.
Henderson?
Yes.
Walker?
Yes.
Orlando?
Yes.
Okay. Renahan?
Yes.
Gonyo?
Yes.
Amadeo?
Yes.
Hoffman?
Yes.
And I vote yes. All right.
Congratulations, Brad and Justine. And I'm sure Lynn is elated. She's been pondering this for a while. And obviously, we so appreciate your amazing service to this commission. It's been, like Jeff said, we don't want it to end, but this is... this is a good transition, I think.
Thanks, Roseanne. And Brad and Justine will be brilliant. So.
Absolutely.
I'm here to help if and when I can.
Be careful.
All right. Meeting minutes have been tabled, staff updates.
So we did want to mention, for everyone, that the slavery exhibition at Faneuil Hall that Joe Bagley and team have put together is happening tonight at 6 for a select invited audience of folks who are close to the history of the enslaved. But on Friday at 1 p.m., there will be an opening for everyone, for the public, and it should be pretty amazing. We'll all be there. I hope some of you can make it downtown for that.
And then after that, it's free and open.
Yes,
when the normal business hours are.
Right, whenever Faneuil Hall is open.
Yeah. That's exciting. And that was partly CPA funded, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And you had other news?
We are close to hiring a temporary architectural historian to assist Dorothy in her Herculean task of managing the study reports project while Jennifer's gallivanting around with a new baby and all that. So we're looking forward to some help that will come in very handy, and we'll make that announcement hopefully at the next hearing.
All righty. I guess I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Everyone.
Yep. Good to see you all.
Thank you.
Yeah, we need need an in-person event.
We absolutely do.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get on that.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
See you later.
Bye.